Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jane Kadish. I'm from the State University of New York at Albany. I'm the convener of this session, The Drivers, Challenges, and Benefits of Hosting ERP Applications. Our speakers today are Walter Kistner, Business Development Manager of Cedar Crestone, Rick Klopin, CIO of the Kentucky Community and Technical College System, and Max Davis Johnson, Associate Vice President for IT at Boise State University. Please remember to complete an online evaluation, which you can find from the link on the conference program page, and enjoy the program. Thank you.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining us at the 1 o'clock post-lunch session time. So we'll do our best to keep you awake. I know everybody's probably been to lunch or hungry for lunch, so either way, we'll try to keep you awake. I'm just going to talk a little bit, and then I'm going to get myself off of the stage and introduce you to the two gentlemen that you really want to talk to. I want to say, first of all, that we do welcome questions throughout the presentation. We do have a slide at the end for questions, but we're more comfortable with you guys asking whatever you need to ask as we go through. Obviously, we have an initiative to get through what we want to tell you about, but I think it's much more comfortable to ask questions as you go. Just a real brief review of the agenda. We'll do introductions. We're going to talk about the drivers, as was mentioned earlier in the title, some of the challenges encountered and some of the challenges presented and resolved by the solution we're providing, the benefits of doing it the ways that have been done, and also the realities. And I think that's probably some of the greatest value that the gentlemen who are going to get here in a minute are going to tell you about is they've been there and they've done that. And they're going to be able to tell you what the reality of going through this is and of hosting and the reality of being in it right now as we speak. This is a good quote from Dealing with Darwin. One of the things that we like to highlight in terms of hosting and outsourcing some of those functions is it allows institutions to concentrate on their core functions. And you're going to see as we talk through this today and as Rick and Max talk through, that's one of the benefits. It's one of the greatest benefits is it frees you up to concentrate on the kind of things that your organizations want to concentrate on your core competencies, on the delivery and the service that you want to provide rather than the support services that get you there to doing that. Rick Klopin, as was introduced a moment ago, just briefly in high level, is somebody from KCTCS, Kentucky Community and Technical College System. He's Chief Information Officer, and what you see up here is a little bit of history of his progression through the organization, but Rick's been with KCTCS for a long time and with Cedar Crestone and in a hosted environment for quite a long time as well. As we progress through the presentation, he's going to tell you a little bit more about himself and about his experience, but you're going to see that there's some differentiators between Max's organization and from Rick's, and I think that's one of the reasons we've put this up here to talk to you. And you'll see some of those differences in both the backgrounds and the organizations and their structures, and it gives you a good continuum of the hosting and the hosting experience on either end, and you're going to see that as well. So Max presided over, just like Rick, over a major implementation of PeopleSoft as well as then hosting services. One of the differentiators is the stage at which hosting played a part, and you're going to see that as well. Max is now with Boise State. And was previously with ASU, presided over implementations prior to that as well, a PeopleSoft implementation in 2003, then with ASU, and then on to Boise State.
And there's no truth to the rumor that I left Arizona State because of hosting difficulties.
And I'll spend very little on my slide, but I've been around in the higher education industry for quite some time and in the services side for an almost equal amount of time. I cut my teeth early on at Southern Methodist University, one of the early implementers of the student product, and have spent many years since going to a variety of institutions around the country and doing various things for them. KCTCS, I mentioned earlier that there are some differentiators, and I think those are the kind of things that add value to this conversation. Kentucky Community and Technical College System was already live with PeopleSoft at the time that they chose to go with hosting. That makes a difference, and you'll see that in their story as it unfolds. And also the size of the environment. You'll see a slide that Rick has that speaks, I think, very eloquently to the ability that hosting provided to increase the kind of services that they provide, and you'll see that played out in the footprint of the infrastructure and the hardware and the technology that they're able to deploy as a result of concentrating on their core services and giving some of the maintenance over to the hosting service. ASU, you had the simultaneous hosting and implementation, so that is a different approach as well. So that was almost a greenfield approach there in terms of bringing in the technology and bringing on the hosting at the same time. In addition, you have the challenge there of coming in with all new environments, as the final bullet points out. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Rick to talk about KCTCS for a little while, and then we'll go back and forth between Rick and Max as we go through.
Well, as the slide says, KCTCS was created in 1997. We went live in 1998. It's part of higher ed reform in the state of Kentucky. 58 schools were combined. Community colleges were largely managed by the University of Kentucky. Technical schools were part of several different agencies, state agencies. And after the governor signed the law, all of a sudden it was one new institution. Had no central central administrative staff, no payroll systems, no HR. Had 43 different student systems running on anything from DEC alphas to system 36s to who knows what primes I can remember. All kinds of different media. Half of the technical schools weren't connected to a network. And it was a real challenge. I mean, this is 1998. Some of us can remember the year 2000. 1998 wasn't the time to be trying to hire IT people or even find consultants with all the money to be made with the year 2000. Not to mention the two organizations that we came from basically walked away from us. University of Kentucky, as it happened, ran state advertising campaign trying to keep the community college system because it was a real political plum to them. We've all made friends since then, but it was a real interesting environment in 98. At that time, when we combined our institutions together, we were about 28,000 students. You'll notice now we're 106,000 students. So over the last approximately 10 years, we've almost quadrupled in size, quadrupled in budget. We took those 58 schools and through a lot of redistricting and combining and making combined community and technical colleges, we now have 16 accredited colleges that make up the KCTCS system. They all have multiple campuses. So we basically have 70 campuses across the state. Oops, I'll go the right way. I'll be in good shape. Way back when, there's all kinds of hosting, and my colleague Max will kind of go into the real strategic nature of hosting in the hosted environment, and I'll talk much more tactically. You know, community colleges, we don't use the big words. We just have to kind of get the job done. We've always been semi-hosted. We've basically had 18 people to run the state, and that number stayed pretty flat over the last 12 years. We've always had to partner. Early on, when we were putting in PeopleSoft, we had 6 months to get PeopleSoft up to get our HR system up and our financial system so we could get people paid. We're literally being taken off of all the other payroll and financial systems we're a part of. So getting a system up in 6 months when you've got half, you know, no one knows each other, you're hiring HR people, financial people, technical people, was interesting predicament. But even back then, we partnered as hard as we could. We had to. We worked with consultants. Early on, we contracted with the state of Kentucky, who hosted our Unix systems. We rented space. We bought the computers. We took on, had our own Unix administrators, had our own DBAs, and basically did all the technical stuff, where we had PeopleSoft consultants in helping us really define our system. I mean, you're starting from scratch. You've got all different kinds of ways of doing it. So it was probably more of a political issue than a technical issue at the time. I should mention that even though we have 16 accredited colleges, we are one system. We have one instance of PeopleSoft. We have one instance of financials. We have one instance of contributor relations. We run as a single institution. Students can be in multiple colleges, multiple campuses. They get one transcript, one schedule, one catalog. So everything's built up into the one system, and everything we do in IT is centralized. Networks, voice over IP, BI, learning management systems, the whole nine yards. I'll get this right yet. So early on, we had a really simple environment. We had our good old IBM server out there doing client server and just had a handful of users. This is what got us up and running. This is what got people paid. This is how our institution started. So over the first year, we concentrated on the financials and HR, and then we started to take a look at the student systems and getting them all merged and getting all the data converted into a central format and all that kind of stuff and bringing up the student system. Currently, this is our current environment, our hosted environment. We've been hosted with Cedar Crestone since 2002. We were their first big higher ed client. Before that, we worked with the state of Kentucky to host, and then we moved over to the University of Louisville for a couple years, who ran our computer systems and actually provided backup and operations and Unix administration, where we continue to do all the DBA work with Oracle and do all the other technical work. KCTCS has always done their own PeopleSoft development. Most of the 18 people I talked about, about six of them are devoted heads down PeopleSoft developers who work with our functional users, and we'll get a little bit into that in a minute. A couple things I'll mention about the size of our environment. Community colleges are very different. When I moved over from a four-year school to a two-year school, I didn't really appreciate it at the time. You know, four-year school, you've got the kind of the window where people get enrolled and, you know, accepted in April. You've got summer to get them in the classes. They come in. They're around for, what, four, five, 6 years now and move on. Community colleges in August will have 30,000 people come in off the street that have to be registered, get financial aid, get in their classes, and it starts at 6 o'clock that night. If there's a huge line, if people can't get in, they go home. We failed our mission. I mean, Kentucky's way down in the bottom of the any ratings you want to use in terms of educated populace. It's our job as KCTCS. We are created to try to help that. If people come and they can't enroll, they just go home, and we failed in our mission. So these systems are truly, I guess this is moving on without me. And one thing I want to mention here, in August 16th this year, we had 84,000 different people log on the PeopleSoft that day. And it's a pretty significant number. Over the 2 weeks in August, we'll go anywhere between 1,200 and 2,700 people being concurrently signed on. Huge mission. As the economy continues to tank, our budget continues to get cut, but our numbers continue to go up. You know, we've grown 12% 1 year, 6% this year. Who knows what it'll be next year. The one thing here is we don't have to worry about all that hardware out there. We've got an SLA. If our mean times go down, if they don't make performance goals, we get paid back money. But there's no way as a public institution that we can go and buy a whole new infrastructure, buy another 10 terabyte SAN and plug it in, or get another 16 gigs of RAM overnight when you see your performance going down. All those things have happened over the years with our hosting. Real quickly, I'll let...
Real quick, and again, I'm going to say I've been there about 2 months, but certainly here
we're talking about, you know, the ASU experience where I was prior to Boise State. ASU, 70,000 students this fall semester, that's residential students on campus, about 18,000 faculty staff. In other words, it's a large research institution, a lot of growth and change. And I'll talk a little bit more about, you know, certainly why ASU decided to go the hosting route. Not a really good picture there, but there are 1,800 palm trees on the main Tempe campus, too. So, anyway.
Well, the drivers, Walter covered them, and we'll be going into them in depth. There's a lot of reasons to go hosting. I think I have kind of enumerated a lot of things that drove us. Let's just move ahead real quickly here. You know, basically there's short-term reasons, long-term reasons to host. Economies of scale. You know, certainly now everyone's talking about cloud-based computing, your applications and your data is out there, and you're just supporting browsers on campus, which is awful nice. But a lot of it comes down to expertise. A lot of it comes down to the level of technology, the level of personnel that can be brought to a problem. Again, being a state agency, being, you know, a public university, we don't have a whole lot of turnover. And unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, a lot of the staff have, you know, same color hair as I do. You know, we've got a very aging staff. We've been in a hiring freeze for several years now. We haven't been able to bring in new blood. We can't retrain people. It's awful hard to keep up with technology as networks change, as we move from client server to cloud-based to web-based, and the type of security challenges now. I mean, we, you know, obviously there's whole sessions here devoted to just that, and you can't possibly keep hiring that kind of expertise with all those specialties when you need it. Our whole philosophy has been outsourced. We didn't have much choice in 98, but it worked so well for us. I still have a job, and our institution has prospered. And like I said, tripled in size. Our costs per technology per student, it continues to plummet. We take advantage of that. We did the same thing. We took over, as I said, half the schools weren't even on a network. So as a kind of a sneaky strategy to get a managed network out there, we decided we'd partner up with someone and put in voice over IP phones all over the state. Well, one of the byproducts of having a voice over IP phone on everyone's desk, you just plug your desktop into it and you've got a managed network. We have a public network in Kentucky, so all of the higher ed institutions participate together, so we have postalized rates in Kentucky, and I really applaud my colleagues at the big research schools, University of Kentucky, University of Louisville. They could have gone out and cut their own deal, got much cheaper networking, but we've held together, so I can get a gig in Paducah, I can get a gig in Maysville just as cheap as we get a gig in Lexington or Louisville or Cincinnati, or in Cincinnati, Byron anyway. When we talk about hosting, when we talk about outsourcing, the word I've always used internally, and our leadership have picked it up, it's really strategic partnering. We don't call it we're outhost, we just have strategic partners. I've got strategic partners that support those voice over IP phones. I've got strategic partners that support the network that connects all our institutions together. I've got strategic partners that host my learning management environment. I've got strategic partners that do our BI. Again, we've been really flat. I've got 18 people. I've got one network security person that does network security for the whole state, working with our partners. Being a small institution, having a small, not a small institution, but having a small staff, you know, you do have all kinds of issues, especially when you're dealing with auditors. You know, if you think about change management, if you basically have one programmer who's doing financials, you have one programmer that's doing payroll, you have one programmer that's doing students, et cetera, how do you maintain that security? Well, nice thing about having a strategic partner that's hosting your environment is no one that reports in our institution can make a change in our production system. We maintain environments. We have a training environment, a test environment, a development environment, and a production environment. We have to use our strategic partner, Cedar Crestone's change management system, to make any changes. Same thing when it comes to audit time. When the external auditors come in, we've got Cedar Crestone's SAS 70. Much simpler. Max talked a little bit about disaster recovery plans. Again, all of those problems go away. It's easy to just think about just keeping the system up and running, but all of the things that are involved in that, you know, just basically go away if you pick the right strategic partner in the particular environment that you're working in. Just like any other system with a major ERP, there's always changes. You've got the dot changes, then you've got the major changes. Again, working with strategic partnership, you can bring in the right tools when needed. We can bring in supplement our staff with consultants and whatnot when it comes time to move to a new system. We can bring in staff for new projects. We can have our staff focus on the important things for the KCTCS institution. You know, having 16 different accredited colleges under one system has not been trivial. We've had to do some fairly creative things there to keep SACs happy, because the disadvantage of being a system like us is we're always under accreditation. You've got 16 different accredited schools. That means two or three of them are always in the middle of an accreditation visit and leads to all the usual rigmarole, but we're doing that all the time. Financial drivers are pretty much the same for both ASU and for KCTCS. I mean, we're all being driven by budget. Where can your money go? You know, what is the mission critical things your institution needs to be working on? Does it need to be running a data center? Does it need to be worrying about disaster recovery? Does it need to be worried about just keeping up systems for administrators? Or does it need to be focused on its key mission, which is obviously teaching and research? And I think these pretty much speak for themselves. We all have the drivers about security, disaster recovery, SAS 70, and all that good stuff. And I think this might be a good point to turn it over to Max.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Rich. So I want to talk a little bit about some of our thought processes at I'm not a Mac user. Take me a second here. Which way am I going? Thank you. I thought I did. I'm going the right way. Sorry about this, guys. We'll get there. I like pictures. I can't talk to words. All right. So I think at ASU, we were trying to, I got there about 5 years ago, and ASU, like a lot of institutions, had been continuing to invest in information technology. I think, you know, at one time, you know, some of you may have seen this slide before. At one time, you know, higher ed was a leader in education technology. You know, we were one of the earlier groups to use email. Certainly, we were using the internet very early in the process. But even though over time we continued to invest further and further in technology, our ability to stay on what I would call the technology curve, we were getting pretty far behind. And so certainly, ASU needed a new strategy. We needed to figure out how to get back on the technology curve. And so, a little bit earlier in the beginning of the presentation, we talked a little bit about the concept of core versus context. The idea is you want to focus on your core technologies, and if possible, you want to take your context technologies, which are very important, but you want to, you know, in this case, you know, partner with somebody whose core technologies are your context. And certainly early in the process, if you looked at the division of labor, of effort at ASU, you know, probably 20% of the effort funding, whatever, is sent in core, and 80% was spent on context. And certainly you want to be able to shift that balance. You may never, ever get to a point where you're looking at 80% of your effort is dedicated to core technologies, but certainly getting more and more closer to a 50-by-50. So this was sort of an overarching strategy or principle that we were applying to what we were doing at ASU. So I think part of our strategy then was to manage our context through strategic alliances. ASU has a reputation, and probably rightfully so at this present time, where we do a lot of strategic partnering, outsourcing, whatever you want to call it. And in all cases, we are trying to take things that we thought were context technologies and partner with people who they were core technologies. Certainly, hosting PeopleSoft, which Cedar Crestone does for us, was a big part of that. ASU has also outsourced their network operations. Certainly, Gmail they've been using for quite a while. Looking at some of you may, we actually last week, ASU last summer moved to Blackboard from a hosting standpoint, so that now their Blackboard system is being hosted at Blackboard. Again, they had a little difficulty beginning of the semester, but they've gotten through those. But the idea is, you know, let's partner. You know, let's get out of the context business as much as we can. So I think there were a couple factors that ASU was, when they decided to implement PeopleSoft. One, the status of their current administrative systems was not in a good place. Obviously, ASU had to do something. They had to do something quickly. ASU has experienced a lot of enrollment growth, a lot of change, all sorts of things. Just to give you a good example, which I'm sure some of you have been familiar with, ASU wanted to change the name of one of their campuses from main campus to Tempe. You know, very important to the president, we don't have a main campus, we have multiple campuses. In the legacy system, it took almost 6 months. We had to go through literally zillions of lines of COBOL code trying to find the place where we referenced the campus. Obviously, in PeopleSoft, all you would do would be, updating a table. So we needed to get to a more sustainable environment. And we needed to do it quickly. And so ASU looked at their schedule and, they did a fairly rapid implementation for an institution of their size on PeopleSoft. ASU literally signed their PeopleSoft licensing agreement on February 28th, 1 year. And by March 1st, the next year, they were enrolling students for the following fall in almost a 12-month time. And ASU could not have done that if they had not gone to a hosting model. What hosting provided them in this case was the ability to say, day one, yeah, we want to host. And literally in a week, they had a PeopleSoft instance where they could touch it, they could feel it, they could start using. We sort of joked about it. It was probably running in a laptop in some bus terminal in Atlanta, but it was working for us. If we had tried to do that ourselves, it would have taken us probably 6 months to get to a point where we could have had our own environment. ASU did not have expertise in the Oracle infrastructure. Certainly, we did not have the hardware. We would have acquired the hardware, the training, and in a lot of cases, the technical licensing from Oracle. So another of the big drivers for ASU in deciding to host was which is what I call the student wave, but we're all familiar with that. Higher ed gets flash crowds beginning of the semester. You get every student in your institution logging on the system, checking schedules, changing classes, trying to figure out where they're going to go. So that first couple days of the semester can be very intense from a system load standpoint, and so we tend to build our systems to be that big so they can handle the beginning of the semester. And then the rest of the time, occasionally we'll have spikes, midterm grades or the end of the semester where people are doing, a lot more activity on the system. But we've built this huge system to basically handle load here, and most of the time we're running along here. We wanted that to be somebody else's problem, because especially the first couple times you go through that, your ability internally to configure your systems, to build your internal systems, to handle a load like that it's going to be suspect, even though you would probably do lots of modeling, lots of load testing. And so we wanted to partner with somebody who had been through that before. And thanks to KCTS, Cedar Crestone had been through that before. It's interesting. I think this is the first week of the first semester that we brought up PeopleSoft at ASU. Rich alluded to the fact that, they had a concurrent use of about 2,700 that was their peak. At ASU, our peak was actually about 3,800 concurrent users during this time period. And from a sizing standpoint, that's one of the main metrics that in a PeopleSoft environment that is used from a sizing standpoint. So it just gives you an idea of the load that was actually on that system. So certainly, the idea that hosting has worked very well for ASU. It's been very dependable, very reliable. Typically, you might have load issues because it is a distributed server environment. A server may get bogged down, and you may see some latency in performance. But from an overall standpoint, it's been a very reliable, dependable system for ASU. However, It took us a while to get there. And so I want to talk about, not necessarily issues, but just some of the things to think about if you're moving to a hosted environment. And so some of the things that ASU experienced, certainly the concept of, we're higher ed, we have people that potentially are on our systems 24/7, we need 24/7 availability. And that's all and good, and certainly we want to command that and demand that, but at the same time, because we are in a hosted environment and they have other clients potentially in that environment, maybe not from a hardware perspective, but maybe from a network perspective or coming into the data center, you have to account for periodic maintenance. And because you have multiple clients, those maintenance windows are scheduled out at least a year in advance, and if not further. And, that's good. Typically, it's on a weekend, and it can be sort of a long window. But wait a minute. This is the weekend before enrollment, before the beginning of the semester. We can't have the systems down. Oh, my God, what are we going to do? And so certainly there was, certainly working with, your provider, working with Cedar Crestone, we were able to negotiate, these windows, either compressing them or in some cases, not even doing the required maintenance at certain key times in the semester. So again, flexibility was very important to us, but it did take us a while to get there. And certainly at the beginning, ASU, when you're going through an implementation, it's certainly different than production environments, because you have multiple environments, you have many more environments. You have a test environment for financial aid, you have a test environment for HR, you have a test environment for records. You're making changes all the time, you're doing refreshes. I mean, it gets to be very complicated, very difficult. And so certainly, you have to have a lot of flexibility in working with your vendor. And I think, so a lot of cases we said, it was like learning to dance, where Cedar Crestone wanted to get us in where we were just doing the waltz, just dancing slow, pretty predictable what we're doing. I'm not a very good dancer, obviously. And, we wanted them to tango. We got to move this. We got to make this copy tonight, and we're going to move all these objects tomorrow. And, we're just trying to do all these different things, and you had all these different groups. And so it took us a while to get in the same rhythm. And certainly, quickly over time, we did get in the same rhythm. But you have to be aware of that. They're going into a relationship. There's going to be some give and take and learning how to dance and getting in the same rhythm. And so, the end result is again, it's a partnership. You have to look for key things. And I'll talk a little bit more about that, but it truly is a partnership. After a certain point in time, after we got through the initial implementation, it was pretty rare when I even, worried about, the relationship or anything like that. It was just like, we have multiple data centers, and oh, by the way, one of them happens to be in Atlanta. If we needed something, we would work with them. Obviously the process, a lot of regular meetings, a lot of regular calls, a lot of work's being done, but it would be just like you're working with your internal staff. And so you have to start thinking of this as a partnership and not as some adversarial relationship. And so throughout this whole process, you start thinking about, okay, so what are some, we're talking a little bit about what are some lessons learned. And I like to call them realities, because most of the time people think I don't deal in the real world, and so I wanted to be specific. So this is real world stuff here. So a lot of times if you're looking at hosting, you don't know exactly what you want. I mean, you may think you want, maybe it's more reliable service. Maybe you're thinking that you have to do a major upgrade or major investment in hardware. Now's a good time to move. But again, it's not entirely clear what you're looking for. So I think any type of move into hosting, there needs to be a discovery process from both sides of the house, from your side of the house and from the vendor side of the house. Build that into the RFP process. I think that's very critical. If you try to put out a RFP that has everything defined, I think there's a couple things there that are not in your favor. One, typically you're just going to get exactly what you asked for in that RFP, which may be not going back to, it may not be exactly what you want. And at the same time, you know, the vendors, you know, they're actually are the experts, and you have to realize that, otherwise you wouldn't be asking them, you know, to help you here. So give them some room to tell you what really makes sense in what you're doing. So, you know, another reality, I think, too, and I've alluded a little bit this, too, and Rick did, too, is the contract is not necessarily your safety blanket. You know, if you focus too much on penalties, if you focus too much on service level agreements, if you make it very transactional oriented, it's not going to serve you well. You know, if you are putting in a certain number of transactions in a contract, you know, like I don't know, a good example would be, okay, for this month period, we'll do 300 moves of objects to production, and if you exceed that, we'll charge you $19.95 for every object that we move. Well, that's sort of silly, in my view. So what you want to do is look at what's called banding. You know, build bands into, if you're talking specific, you know, ranges of transactions or hours or things like that. Because typically, what will happen? There'll be an ebb and flow. If you give a little bit, and if the vendor gives a little bit, it's going to be a lot better relationship. Plus, it'll be a lot easier to monitor your contract and your performance going forward, too. And again, try to, you know, think, certainly technology changes. So in the contract process, think a little bit about how long you want the contract to be. Certainly, the longer you extend the contract, a lot of times that will help keep the price down. Also think about termination too, clauses to some degree. Certainly if you terminate a contract early, you should expect to pay some penalty, but at the same time, understand very clearly what that is, you know, work to negotiate that, because technology changes, what your institution changes, you know, you have to build some of this into the contract. And like I alluded to before, the relationship is the key thing. You know, flexibility, it allows improvement, and again, open to change, because you are going to change, and so your relationship needs to change too. A little bit, you know, we've all heard about 5 nines of uptime. Like I said, it's very nice, but none of us really want to pay for 5 nines of uptime. So, take the approach that, okay, what's a realistic uptime that we need at our institution, and build that into your contract. And just to keep things in scale, you know, 4 nines is only down for 52 minutes a year. Is that, you know, I'm talking about unscheduled downtime. Is that, can your institution, you know, stand that? Certainly. But 4 nines is going to be a lot cheaper than 5 nines. You know, 3 nines, you know, you can sort of, it's going to be a lot cheaper than 3. So it's determined going into it, you know, what your real requirement is. And if you do need 5 nines, just be prepared to pay for it. Talked a little bit about service level agreements and penalty clauses. They're good. You need to have those in your contract, in your statements of work. So just you have some metrics that you can point to, but the real thing you really want to focus on is problem resolution. If you have a problem, you want it to get fixed, and that's really the bottom line. So that's where a lot of the energy should be put, a lot of the energy as far as the relationship building, a lot of the energy is as far as when things go bad. Let's not worry about the SLA right now. Let's just get it fixed. I can't speak for Kentucky Community College System, and I can't speak since I have left ASU, but during the 4 years I was at ASU, when we were using Cedar Crescent as hosting provider, you know, there was never a penalty clause executed in the process. We are more concerned about making sure that if we had a problem, it was fixed. again, you know, put your energy into where it matters. All right, so real quick, I need a volunteer. We're going to do a little dialogue here. But when you host, also have realistic expectations. Hosting does not necessarily mean cheaper. So I'm going to read the first line, and if Rich, you can read the next line. Okay, so I'm the outsourcer. And in summary, we can give you the sun, the moon, and the stars.
That's nice, but your price is 15% more than I am spending today.
Understood, but our solution includes continuous improvement programs, better SLAs, less risk, less management time, one throat to choke, variable demand management, the ability to handle more without any cost increase.
All I want is what I'm getting today. Just save me money.
But your data center roof is leaking. You have power problems. They're 2 years behind in your patches. Bottom line is here, just understand, you know, what you're asking for and have a realistic expectation what you're paying for. If you want the same, I'm sure the same can be provided. But again, that's probably not the case.
You have to pay extra for the leaky roof.
Well, ASU did have a lot of issues, but we can talk about those later. Actually, I will talk about that. So it was 2 years ago. The Super Bowl was being played in Phoenix. It was the Super Bowl weekend. A rat literally ate through a power cable. This wasn't the PeopleSoft data center. Ate through our existing data center, brought the whole data center down, ate through a power cable. It was a hard crash. All the UPSs didn't work. And so instead of people going to the Super Bowl celebrations, most of the operations staff was in there trying to bring the data center back up. So anyway, and I'm sure somewhere, in if you look around the internet, you can actually find a picture of the charred rat. So. And this is sort of the last reality check. If you go to a hosting provider, in many cases, they are going to have disaster recovery. But keep in mind, it is their disaster recovery. It is not yours. And so you're going to have to sort of come up with your own strategy, your own plan that fits into their disaster recovery model. So just because you have a hosting provider doesn't mean that you have your disaster recovery. So just keep that in mind and be aware of that, you know, as you go through this process. So actually, I think that is on what the time is.
About 7 minutes.
7 minutes. Wow, got through that.
And if I could just add a couple things, expand on it. Max did a great job there. Just want to emphasize, we said way back, or our institution said, if you have to pull out your contract, you're screwed. The minute you start looking at your contract, the relationship's over. It's just you're in the end game at that point. I will say over the, well, almost 10 years now we've been with Cedar Crest Home, we have got a couple penalty in, but we've never, or excuse me, a couple big checks back from them, but we never asked for them. It was minor things that we never would have called them on, but, you know, technically they didn't make a performance goal the particular month. They refunded our fee. So that was kind of nice, but it wasn't something we called them on. The other advantage that I think we've kind of left out of the slides, if you think about it, is in terms of problem resolution. You know, when you're working with a strategic partner that's hosting multiple institutions and multiple commercial companies, if they run into problems, Oracle or whatever your software partner is much likely to respond to them, bug fixes or code rewrites or whatever, than if a single institution calls. And that's helped us many times. Several years ago, we came under, for some particular reason, we've never been able to quite figure out, a major attack on our address space from overseas. I mean, it was really sophisticated at the time. We'd probably still be down if it was our own resources, but again, by attacking our address space, you know, Cedar Crestone could bring in their partners, so there were Sun engineers and Cisco engineers on site, and it got fixed in 24 hours rather than us trying to speed dial around and get people to come to Kentucky and help us straighten it out. So, you know, that's a huge advantage. And I think we're all open for questions here, Max or Walter or myself. Just shoot away.
Any questions? Yes.
Can you speak a little bit to the
changes at the institution as you moved to from a, oh, our servers are here on campus and we can love them and hold them, and the assistant administrators saying, oh, yes, we want to love them and these, this is our job if they go away. You know, how did you approach those issues?
And so just from an ASU perspective, we were if we would have gone forward to hosting ourselves, we would have had to add a considerable amount of staff that we did not have. And so in our case, it was, you know, it was pretty easy. Now, there's various times where, you know, we would joke about, oh, gosh, maybe we need to go land at the least. But they would send us pictures every once in a while so we could see. I mean, certainly, you know, with the way the industry is going, you know, with cloud services and software as a service, you know, we're a little bit less and less of far wanting to host your own servers. I think one of the things we didn't really talk about is you know, there's different types of hosting models. You know, certainly there's the hosting model where you're just, you know, you've got power and connectivity and cooling, and you put your own machines in. Maybe the next level up would be where you have, hardware is provided up to the, say, the OS level, and then you just put your apps on. And in this case, we're talking about another tier up where, you know, I think we're required to have the PeopleSoft licensing, but Cedar Crestone will provide a lot of the, you know, loading, anything you move to production, Cedar Crestone will act just like your data center where, you know, we don't really want to touch production. So again, hands off, they'll move it to production. The test development environments, we might have a little bit more direct, you know, administrative control. But as far as applying, you know, patches, doing database upgrades, OS upgrades, things like that, those are basically handled all by Cedar Crestone. I think that's certainly in your case, too. What Cedar Crestone doesn't provide in the PeopleSoft environments are, you know, development services, although I'm sure they would if we wanted to pay them. And when they apply patches, and I don't know if you guys are coming from PeopleSoft environments or Banner or any environments, typically your customizations will break. Based on our contract, that was ASU's responsibility to fix those. So,
in terms of culture, again, we're a very different culture. Since we didn't have a glass house, we're a new institution. The only people we really displaced by continuing the outsourcing was two Oracle DBAs, and we certainly found a lot of other functions for them to do. So culture, it wasn't a big deal for us. You know, it's just kind of the way we did business.
I mean, there's, you know, depending on the location, of if you were looking at a large partnering or outsourcing effort, you know, hopefully you can, if you're looking where there would be some potential impact of staff, ASU has gone through this in several other areas. When we outsourced network operations, there were about basically 20 staff that ASU no longer needed. Actually, the majority of that staff then was rehired by Quest, was the provider, was rehired by Quest to basically perform the same services. So certainly look for, if you get in a situation like that, look for opportunities where staff can be shifted to other responsibilities, or in some cases, maybe the new hosting provider will certainly have a need for not only their skill level expertise, but their institutional knowledge too. Yes? Yes, that was certainly, and you know, I mean, even though, you know, we talk about higher ed, you know, being run more like a business and things like that, certainly one of the things about, you know, unique to higher ed is not only that we share a lot of what we do, but we try to think of ourselves somewhat as family, and certainly, you know, you need to have some sensitivity, to that. And in most cases, you'll find vendors that, yeah, they want that expertise.
I think we have time for one more question.
Yes.
Is Boise State going to be playing in the championship this year?
Okay, so depending on what you believe, yes, the answer to that. BCS Bowl, first poll will be coming out this weekend, and if things go to form this weekend, Boise State will be number one in that. Now, I'll have to admit, though, over the rest of the season, Boise's strength of schedule will probably diminish, so they may not quite, you know, unless a lot of people, but yes, they'll be playing.
Thank you.
And yes, it's fun, and I love the blue field. And ducks do crash in the field, so. So let me put that in context a little bit. When you bring up PeopleSoft, and yes, there were customizations. When I say we brought it up, you know, essentially, you know, you look for a beginning, a start semester, especially on the student side. And so, you know, reality, it took 18 months to get to that beginning of that semester. But in the spring, you know, you're starting to enroll students for the fall. And so we had to have certain components, not all of PeopleSoft up, but certainly, you know, the catalog, the schedule, the registration process, that needed to be all up and ready in a year. Financial aid, student financials, a little bit further down. So certain pieces of it, yes, were done in a year. And Cedar Crestone helped us on that, too. So.
Walter, last words?
Sure. Well, to kind of pick up on something Max said earlier, it definitely does take two to tango. And I think one of the things I want to express in closing is that we are so very grateful and thank you to have had a wonderful partnership with both KCTCS and ASU, and with Max and with Rick in particular. Part of what occurred to the three of us in terms of bringing this discussion to you today is that there's two fantastic stories to tell, two narratives that, as I mentioned earlier, I think cover the two ends of a very broad spectrum of the kind of things you find in our industry. It's two distinctly different stories, although there's great commonalities in terms of the drivers, the challenges, the impetuses for why they chose hosting at whatever point in their evolution that they chose that hosting. At the same time, I think some of the surprises along the way, that there are some significant differences due to the structural differences and how those institutions are organized and or distributed around their respective states. So I hope that you find, as I did and as we hoped in putting this together, that you've got two very valuable stories here that give some good information and should cover the broad end of the spectrum here. And there's plenty of flavors in between. There's plenty of levels, as Max alluded to, in terms of the services and offerings that we provide in the hosted area. But these are certainly two of the most complex and some of the largest and biggest undertakings that we have to provide for you. Certainly feel free to stay after to the extent that we can in the room. I think we have to give it up. But there are several of us here, including Rick and Max and myself and some folks distributed through the audience of whom you can feel free to ask questions. And with that, thank you very much for joining us again post-lunch session. I appreciate you being here.